Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Raj Punjabi, head of identity content at HuffPost.
And I'm Noah Michelson, head of HuffPost Personal.
Welcome to Am I Doing It Wrong, the show that explores the all-too-human anxieties we have about trying to get our lives right. Noah, how well do you know your way around the kitchen?
Okay, so here's the thing. I can't shut up about House Hunters on this show. Mm-hmm. I'm always talking about it. But the other thing I'm always watching is Food Network or Top Chef or any of those shows. I love it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm a great cook.
I mean, I bet you are, but I do have to say, I also love all the cooking shows. I also love falling down like a YouTube hole of cooking and how to perfect something. I don't always put it to action.
Right.
And I really would like to.
Yeah, but we both love to eat, even if we aren't great at cooking. But wouldn't it be nice if we could do cooking well, too?
I would love that.
You know who's going to help us? This guy, he doesn't really need any introduction, but we're going to give him one because that's what we do here. It's Jet Tila, who is a chef. He's a restaurant owner, and you've seen him all over TV. He's been judging Chopped. He's been the co-host of Iron Chef America, and we got him to come and reveal his cooking secrets so we can get our meals right.
I, for one, am so excited. All aboard the Jet. Okay, Jet, thank you so much for being here. We are so excited to learn everything from you today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much. I'll give you what I got and we'll see what people think.
All right. So first of all, we love an origin story. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, for those who don't know, when you knew that food was going to be the thing for you?
Man, every day, I still don't know, honestly. The origin story is really simple. My family immigrated to the U.S., specifically here in Silver Lake in Los Angeles in the 1966. And they were part of that first wave of Thai people. If you don't know the history of Thai food in America or Thai people, the first group came in 1966. And both of my parents were in that initial group. They did not know each other. My dad was the troublemaker kid. My mom was a good kid. And unfortunately, they hooked up and had me started the first Thai grocery store in the history of this country. And we opened the first Thai restaurants and then produce company, import company. So we were the first kind of vertically integrated Thai food family. I was born in 75. We opened their first market in 72, restaurant 79. So I literally grew up in it. We were really poor and there was no daycare. There was no whatever. I mean, I grew up in every single business we ever had. In around my 20s, I was like, there's nothing else I'm really good at. I dropped out of high school and made a lot of trouble in LA. And, like a lot of, I think, chef origin stories is, we were born from chaos and we continue to seek chaos in the kitchen. And there's the very short origin story.
I think that is a great segue into just sort of cracking open this episode, because chaos is what we're trying to avoid. And embrace. But I know that you have been on so many TV shows helping people cook better. One of them was Worst Cooks in America, and you were a judge on that. What are some of the things, when you think about the things that the average person who maybe doesn't know that much about cooking, what do you see them getting wrong?
Yeah, you know, cooking is a craft. It is, you know, it's its own thing. And without practice, no one, well, very few people, I think, are born, you know, like Mozart. I just kind of, it's inherent in you. So I think if you break it down and simplify the chaos, right? What is my goal? And cooking falls into two categories, right? All cooking is either dry heat or moist heat, right? You're either sauteing, grilling, baking, or you're braising, boiling. So first start there. So what tools do I need? So get organized. Number two is mise en place, which I think is a big deal, a French word for everything in its place. So be prepared. That's all mise en place really is. And then three, practice, because I think the biggest mistake people make is they think they can do it because they watch YouTube videos or they watch television. That's the number one mistake, right? It is very different than watching people cook, especially watching people that are really good at it and thinking you can do it. So that's really it. I think if you practice a lot and you taste your food and you're prepared, I mean, that's 60% of the game.
Mm-hmm. And you're also a judge on Chopped. We see a lot of major talent on there. What are some mistakes you see even really trained chefs making?
Yeah, it's also the assumption that, you know, cooking in a kitchen under controlled environments can translate to cooking under competitive, you know, circumstances. That's the number one thing. You know, I was a chef for 20 something years before I started competing or was on Food Network. And I was like, oh man, that's easy. Anyone can do this stuff. And I was like, and then I got my ass beat by Morimoto on the biggest stage in the world. And I'm like, okay, I'm an idiot. So yeah, do not assume and practice. Even trained chefs, they come onto Chopped and they get chopped and they're like, well, what the heck? Like, why the hell am I not awesome like I am in my own job? Well, A, the world's big, dude. Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's a humbling experience. And B, you're not practicing. And C, you're not picking dishes that make sense in the format. Those are like the three big ones.
I think those kind of rules that we see on Chopped could very much relate to, say, cooking Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. Like, don't try something new because you saw it on YouTube.
Right.
Practice it. Yeah. You know, this is not the
trial
time.
Run. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have a bunch of questions that are almost like a lightning round that we're going to go through. Some that we came up with, some from listeners who wanted to know things too. But I guess, you know, you keep talking about practicing and that kind of thing. Is that literally, do you mean like practice knife cuts? Do you mean like literally just say you're going to make the same Eggs Benedict 3 weeks in a row and sort of play around with that? What do you think that practice entails? Mm.
You know what? You can break it down. You can make it as complicated or you can make it as easy as you want. But like you said, knife cuts is probably the most fundamental core skill that affects every part of your cooking, right? You cut something inconsistently, they don't cook right. You cut a piece of meat too big and you apply, let's say, a recipe's worth of heat to it. But if it's too big, it's going to be raw in the middle. So yeah, practice, like, you know, it branches. You know, my wife was an educator. I was an educator. And that's how we met and really bonded. And our books are all called 101, like college courses. And, you know, every single minute and hour that you put into cooking, there's this kung fu analogy where, you know, you can do something 100 million times. And at that 100 million time, you've learned something new about it. Mm-hmm. And that's it. There's no shortcuts. I mean, some people are really natural cooks. And I think that has to do with, you know, early exposure. But nobody is going to get really great, you know, in a very quick manner.
I went to school for poetry, which was now in retrospect, such a dumb thing because like I couldn't pay my rent with poems. But that's what I learned there too, is that I just wanted to start writing. And they were like, no, first you have to learn what an ode is. First you have to learn what a sonnet is. And once you know that foundation, then you can freestyle all you want. And like, I feel like the same must be the truth with cooking. Like once you know how to do the knife chops, once you know how to do the grilling, then you can just go crazy.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Poetry, music, carpentry, engine building. There are rules and a language to everything that we do, to every craft. And once you start really kind of nailing those fundamentals, you can start freestyling at that point, just like poetry, just like music, just like karate. I mean, it's really the same thing, but nothing replaces the hours. Nothing yeah. replaces that repetition. You know, there's, you know, that's what makes you really good.
I love that. That feels like spiritual for me to like worship the craft that much that you're actually putting in that time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
One of the things I think that intimidates people the most, or at least I get intimidated by, are knives mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. There are so many different kinds of knives. What would you say is most important? And if you had to pick, like, I'm only going to have two knives in my kitchen, what would they be?
You only need two, honestly. You really just need two, I got to tell you. I think people know me as like the fastest knife on Food Network. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, that's basically repetition. I'm only good because I've done it for 30 years and I took it really seriously. And I had really mean chefs that really demanded, you know, perfection. Everyone needs a chef's knife, right? A tapered chef's knife. Just Google the term. It's that standard knife everyone has in their kitchen. It's bigger in the handle and it tapers to the tip, 6 inches to 10 inches. That's your number one knife. And that's going to do 99% of the work. I mean, yes, I can't tournay. Some nerd chef is going to be like, well, you can't tournay, bro. Well, yeah, idiot. Like no one tournays. Like not everyone tournays anymore. So you need a chef's knife. And my argument, this is me controversial as well. I think you need a serrated knife because you need to cut bread and you need to cut bagels and you need to cut tomatoes and fruit that are really ripe. 90% of the average cook is not going to be, you know, deboning a side of an animal,
right?
It's not going to always be, and you can fillet a fish with these knives. You can do 99% of the work. And the third thing I would say is please, everyone buy a steel.
Yeah.
You don't need to sharpen a knife, but you need to hone a knife. I, as a 30-year chef who's decently accomplished, I don't sharpen my own knives. I have my best friend, Chef Tad Whalen, sharpens my knives once a year, but my job is to keep them honed. And the edge is straight. That's all that long thing does.
I have one more knife question. Do we need to have an expensive knife? Like, are the good ones expensive? Should I be investing in one?
Okay. Absolutely not. You need to invest in a knife, A, if you're very vain and want to look cool.
Pretentious, yes.
Pretentious. Or B, like you want that knife, like you moved into your home and you're married and you're registered and you want something to display. No way, man. Like, yeah, a $20... $10 aluminum knife from the Asian market, Latin market, ethnic global market, is going to, when it's sharp, do the same work as that $5,000 handmade knife. I have both those knives here in my kitchen, and it's your skill level. I will crush any person with a $5,000 knife with a $10 knife in my hand. You know what I mean? They're tools.
It's funny. My family is from India and my mom swears by this knife from the Asian market that she gets. They're all South Asian people know them. They have like a colorful end. They're very small and they cost like $10 for a pack of three or something. And they will cut limbs off. They are so sharp. She uses it on literally everything.
So it's probably Kiwi brand, Raj. Because all of us Asian kids use those knives and our parents have
really
them.
Well. And
they're the best.
I have gotten some nice quote unquote knives, but I always go back to the, you know, plastic handled Asian knife.
I'm not going to lie. When I'm on TV, I use really, really fancy knives, but that's no different than, you know, taking time and getting a nice wardrobe. I mean, you're there, you're projecting an image, you know what I mean? But you don't need it.
You are killing the game. I absolutely love that.
So I love the Barefoot Contessa so much. But one thing she does with her pasta water is she puts oil in it. And I've heard so many people be like, you don't need oil in your pasta water. What do you think about oiling and also salting? How important is salting pasta water?
I think salt is fundamentally important because you need to season your pasta from the inside. But oil, you know what? I've done it both ways. I got to say, like, I wouldn't be doing oil if I was cooking for like Jeffrey Zakarian or Scott Conan or Alex Guarnaschelli because, you know, that yes, the pasta boils, but then that oil keeps everything from all the sauce from penetrating. So, and I think a real, real pro would know, but I think if you're a home cook, I think it's a great tip.
Okay.
Because I think the number one headache we all have as home cooks when we switch in our home cook mode is you don't know if you're saucing right away. You still might be following the recipe and you still got to put that other sauce together. And it does buy you time. It's insurance. You know what I mean? It keeps that pasta more supple longer. So I'm going to split that answer in the middle. A pro chef, I wouldn't do it if I was cooking for pros. I would do it if I was at home trying to cook for family or friends or a party.
That feels useful.
That's a great question. That's a great answer.
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
I love that. Let's talk a little more about salt in general. Iodized salt or sea salt, Florida sel. Like what kind of salt do you love to use?
Man, Raj, you really want people to fight on this
show. I know. This is what we do here.
Yeah. Well, you know, risking sounding like a total like snob. If you can afford it, you need all those salts. Right. Yeah. And I'll tell you where you need them. Right. Of course, my grandmother, we only cooked with iodized salt because it's all we had. And it was 39 cents for that round tub of Morton's, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And it was salty as hell and it made everything delicious. Mm-hmm. So iodized salt for popcorn, for curing, for pickling, because it's really, really salty and it's super fine. So for popcorn, I don't think there's better salt, honestly. Mm. I'm not sponsored here, but you ask 100 chefs that are pros and you ask them what kind of kosher salt you use. We mostly use Diamond Crystal. Sorry, okay. I Morton's, I gave you the plug on the iodized.
Yeah.
I don't give you the plug on the, so the grains are larger, fatter. They're like snowflakes. So they melt more and they're less concentrated. So kosher salt for 99% of your work, seasoning as you're cooking, right? Everything. You could even finish with it. I know snobs will say no. Then you go to your Malden and your sea salt and your flake salt, your baleen salt. Those are finishing salts, like really nice oils. So in my mind, if you only get to have one, kosher salt is it will do everything. Kosher salt will do everything. Mm-hmm. Iodized salt is a specialty salt nowadays, unless, you know, iodized salt can also be fine for everything, but really, really expensive sea salt, flake salt, save it for the topping. If you can't crunch it, don't put it in the dish. Don't dissolve it.
Let's talk about kitchen gadgets.
Yeah.
I know this is going to be hard, but what's your number one kitchen gadget that you kind of can't live without?
Oh, man, that's a good one. So, knives are your ultimate kitchen gadget. I'm just going to be that guy and be like, you don't need a food processor if you're really good with a knife. But, a kitchen gadget that I find myself reaching for a lot is actually a planer, a rasp.
Oh, yeah.
You can grate cheese. You could grate spices, you can grate a lot of things. And in terms of electrics, I think a really good food processor is clutch. You know what I'm saying? Like you gotta like make hummus and you gotta make, you know, bread, like pie dough, you know? Yeah. So one thing that people don't use a lot is the small mini prep food processor. Mm-hmm. And I really love it because it doesn't weigh 5,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. And if I only need to make a tiny bit of dressing or hummus or an emulsion, it actually has holes in there that you could pour the oil in and it drips, measures like, you know, streams for you. That's a big one for me. I really love the mini food processor a lot. I mean, so I named a few that I really love.
Jet, this is maybe a dumb question, but
no such thing.
The food processor is very different than blender though, right? And so when you say that you're not like, you're doing different things with, I think in my head, a lot of times I'm thinking you can do the same thing, but you're saying they're very different. Yeah.
A blender, because the blender top forces the cone of product down, will liquefy like no other thing.
Right.
A food processor will bring air into it won't really liquefy well. It'll create emulsions and purees much better. So if you really know what you're doing, if I could only pick one and take it on a desert island, I'd probably end up taking the blender, believe it or not. That's actually a good chef question. Every time you have a chef, blender or food processor, you'll see their minds blow up a little bit if they really think about it.
Yeah.
That little food processor, I use it almost every other day because it's like Asian food also. I make a lot of Indian food, the base of everything. And mine's $10.99.
Right.
And it works so well. It's a big part of my life.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tenth of the cost of a big food processor. And if you do it in things in batches, you can do basically everything you can in a big food processor.
Yeah.
Is there a gadget you think is a total waste of money and people don't need to buy that? There's so many
I'm sure
now.
There is.
Yeah.
I'm sure there, silicone pots that you put in the microwave, like pasta, like it's like those like late night things, like, you know what I mean? Silicone is one of the best things ever. But I've seen like silicone, cook your pasta in here and cook your protein. It'll brown it. It won't brown it. It will steam it. Yeah.
Okay, speaking of microwave, how often are you using a microwave? What are you using it for?
Bro, Chef Mike is my boy. Are you kidding me? We call him Chef Mike in our... you know, because I was born from very lean means, man. The microwave is everything. And Jeffrey Zakarian is one of the chefs I respect the most in the world. He admits it too. Like, I've used microwave daily. I use a microwave and I use an air fryer as a home cook almost every single day. In 10 meals, I'll use the microwave in 8. What we call retherming, reheating food, cooking food, you know, bringing things up to temp. The microwave, Chef Mike is the man. I mean, you know what I mean?
Love that.
I do too. And I do. I think there's some people who think like that they're snobby and they think like you shouldn't use it, but it is so useful.
It's genius. Yeah.
Whoever's railing against microwaves, just do a personality analyzation, please. Like,
yeah.
And I'm and that curve between like that graph between like super snobby and not in tune with the reality, they're going to meet like right there. You know what I mean? I don't hang out with people who are like, oh, I don't use a microwave. Well, all right, good. Do it the hard way, long way.
I feel that. Speaking of those silicone pads, we got a question from a listener and she said, what are your thoughts about using silicone pads for roasting or baking? So if people don't know, you can get these pads now that you put on your cookie sheets or on your to roast with. And I've usually seen it for baking, like it helps cookies come off easily. I guess this listener is also using it. She said, I feel like vegetables don't cook the same as when I use aluminum foil on a tray. Cookies seem to turn out differently too. Am I imagining this? Do you think we should be using them?
Listener, you are 100,000,000% correct. But again, let's break everything down to science and heat and conduction, right? So silicone is plastic, right? At its core, and can't brown things, right? It won't get hot enough, right? In order to get the Maillard effect, in order to brown something, you know, it needs to be on a layer of a conductive surface, right? That can transfer that very extreme heat. If we know that silicone melts and fails at 400 or 500 degrees, we're never going to get it hot enough. And it's not going to be, frankly, safe. You don't want to be eating that off gas. Mm-hmm. Silicone is amazing. I love it for baking though. So for back to the question about baking, we have these things called Silpats.
Right.
You could bake cookies. You could bake cakes. It's really, really lovely. Nothing past 400 to 500 degrees on silicone. Just make that your mantra. And if you're trying to brown, forget silicone. Mm-hmm. Go to metal. If you're trying to bake and you're trying to keep your life clean and tidy and heat proof, silicone is fantastic.
Yeah. When you roast something or you're baking something, are you using aluminum foil if you're not using silicone or no?
Yeah. Okay. I'm using aluminum foil. I'm actually using parchment paper as well. Ah. Parchment paper actually will conduct very well. You can actually brown. You'll get better top brown, obviously. But if you want to brown from the bottom, because it acts almost like a reflector, like, you know, those when you old-timey sunbathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aluminum is fantastic because it's basically just a very thin layer of metal and it's going to brown just awesomely. And once you're done, it saves dishwashers and pot washers' life. It really does.
Right. And people at home too. It makes cleanup so much easier.
Yeah.
And I don't want to clean up. Like, I'd rather cook than clean up. Exactly. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
So Raj, tell me, how is your social battery right now?
You know, today it's pretty high and vibrant, but it varies day to day.
That makes total sense because it's super easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter.
Truly. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. For me, therapy has been illuminating. Just to be able to process day-to-day anxieties has helped me so much. I kind of wish that for everyone.
Well, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/doingitwrong today and get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/doingitwrong.
Welcome back to Am I Doing It Wrong? I have a question. My favorite thing to do when I go out to a restaurant, I taste something absolutely orgasmic. I want to try it at home. I want to see if I can recreate it at home, right?
Yeah.
Why does my pasta dish or pad thai or whatever it is not taste as good? Is it because of my skill level, which is aggressively mediocre? Or is it because I'm not using all the butter they're using in the restaurant?
Especially too, I would love for you to answer that in general, but also especially pad thai. I feel like pad thai at home never tastes as good as in the restaurant.
It's because we're not Thai.
Yeah.
Probably.
Because you haven't watched my Ready, Jet, Cook show and learned pad thai with me.
That's probably it. Yeah.
That's number one. Well, you're like, the real answer to that is yes, fat in most cases, because when you're cooking for yourself, you're literally like the Terminator measuring the amounts of calories as we're cooking. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I'm cooking for you and I'm in a kitchen and I'm throwing it out, you can't see in there. Right. I'm using all the tricks, all the tools, extra fat, extra salt. Right. So that's going to probably be 70% of the case. When we get into ethnic cuisine or global cuisine, it's ingredient understanding and technique and practice.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Right. And in Asian food, most of the cases, it's MSG. I'm not going to lie.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So good.
A lot of restaurants use it. I will use MSG in my cookbook and I will say, here's a disclaimer. If you're sensitive and if you believe all the malarkey publishing things in the 60s, don't use it.
Right.
But if you're like most people that are not, if you're going to eat Cheetos and say you don't eat MSG, you're full of it. If you're going to eat Doritos, you're not making sense. That's all. So the two simple ones are fat and then understanding ingredient boosters, right? Flavor enhancers that we understand as chefs that I think a lot of home cooks don't yet.
When it comes to the pad thai, what do you think the one thing that the home chef is not doing right is? What is that ingredient booster they're not using?
Pad Thai is alchemy. You need to understand the difference in fish sauces, tamarind paste, dried shrimp. There's a lot of secret umami boosters in Pad Thai that are actually natural that people aren't bothering to get at home.
Are you using MSG at home, Jet?
At home, I do. Yeah. If I'm cooking for guests, though, I will ask them first.
Okay.
Right? But at home for my family, you bet. I grew up on it. My kids are growing up on it. The thing is, again, we're eating it at other places and then we're kind of crucifying Asian restaurants for using it.
Totally.
We're eating it every day in other foods. So, so you bet I am using it. I am from the school of MSG is not bad for you unless you have some very special intolerances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is one thing you would not make at home?
Oh, what is one thing, you know, like... I'll do all the intricate stuff. Like we've cooked king crabs here, whole salmons.
Wow.
Like we've gone crazy in the house. But for most people, they would say deep frying sucks at home.
Yeah.
Right.
But
if you're talking about me specifically, I'm not going to tackle fast food because no one can do it the way they can.
Oh man, right? That's so real.
I think you're right though with deep frying, like just the act of it, like your entire kitchen's coated in oil then. And like, it smells like that for 4 days. And I'm probably not going to get it as delicious if I just buy onion rings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The investment of time versus reward for deep frying for most people is not going to make sense in my opinion.
Completely. What is one thing that you would never order at a restaurant that you would just say, I'm going to always make it better at home or I think it's more delicious at home?
Yeah, that's a good one. I you know what? Very few Asian restaurants. Like if I'm in a city where I'm working and they're not known for like Asian food, I will not like touch it. I will not go in and to a place that serves everything that's serving pad thai.
Right.
Like, oh, hell no. Yeah. Like, yeah. I know I'm setting myself for disappointment. Or like, I don't eat it like, oh man, I don't want to trash restaurants. I don't eat like things that probably aren't being cooked a lot in that area. How's that?
No, that makes perfect sense.
That's smart.
Like, yeah, I don't want to crush on restaurants because everyone's just trying to make a living.
No, I agree with that. But I think sometimes, yeah, I go to a restaurant and they have lobster on the menu and I'm like, I'm not sure that you are qualified.
It's like a landlocked location.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they have, you know, everything else. And I'm like, I don't know about the lobster here.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You nailed it. Fish too.
Yeah.
Like somewhere you're far away. Like, you know, although most fish is flash frozen really well, mm-hmm. if you don't really specialize in making seafood, I'm probably not going to touch it. You know?
Yeah.
Jet, I've heard this thing about restaurants too. Like if you order fish on a certain day, like don't do it then because it's probably the end of the week. And is there any truth to that? That like, you know, restaurants are only ordering one day a week and then by the end of the week it's old or something like that.
I think in higher end restaurants, that's actually a really good tip because they're probably not defrosting a lot of fish. But, you know, I think Tony wrote a really nice paragraph, like a chapter about that. Mm. I don't know if that holds true anymore. I think the technology nowadays is, I'm going to tell everyone right now, like most fish, even sushi fish, like at the highest grade restaurants in the world, it came in frozen.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. I know. Because of the freezing technology out there, they literally catch it on the boat. They process it. They take the guts out. They fillet it and they freeze it, you know, negative 80, negative 100 blast tunnel. And it literally freezes so quickly that it doesn't lose any. I mean, it's basically like you caught it that day whenever you defrost it correctly.
That's
incredible. So seafood technology in the last 50 years is bonkers. It'll blow your mind.
You know, a few years ago, everyone got really into tinned fish. It was this like moment and I loved it. But for beginners like me, I don't know what I should be getting from a can, just outside of fish too. What are some of your favorite ingredients and things you use in your cooking at home that come from a can?
That's a great question.
I actually use a lot of things that come from a can.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like some like really, so tin fish, obviously like sardines are fantastic because they're from Spain or they're from like where the best fish in the world are packed in the best olive oil. So tuna, obviously, but tin fish is a big one, you know, because of these darn crazy fun cooking shows we do on Food Network. I mean, I've eaten squid out of the can. We've done chicken out of the can, like whole chicken out of the can. We've done rattlesnake out of the can. But few things like seafood, I think are a good thing. Curry paste out of the can is probably the best, period. Better than the jar, better than the package.
Ooh.
So certain things cans do really well. Coconut milk, best in the can.
Is there something that you've come across recently, Jet, that you were like, this is the best thing I've had? And like, how has this not been in my life? Whether it's a gadget or like a tinned food or something or a dish you had somewhere. Like, is there something you're really excited about that you hadn't known about before? Mm.
That's a good question. I mean, I grew up in LA and I grew up very, you know, meager means. So I didn't understand why people love sandwiches so much. Right. I was like, because in my mind, it was cheap. Like we had government 5-pound blocks of government cheese and white bread because that's all we could afford for a lot of my life. So now as I was traveling to the East Coast, dude, like hot beef sandwiches and real deli, like good pastrami. So in the last decade, I know it sounds super weird, but you know,
it does not sound weird.
And bagels, like because West Coast, we don't get bagels here. Like our bagels are terrible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the more I travel in these last decade, I'm like really like understanding good bread, good meat, good cheese put together in great combinations. Like that's a new thing to me, you know?
That is great. I love a sandwich.
Sandwiches are my life, my entire life.
Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in the Midwest in Wisconsin and same thing in the 80s.
Sandwiches.
Great sandwiches, but like I didn't see an avocado till I went to college. You know what I mean?
Right.
We didn't have a Thai restaurant in my small town. And so it's incredible now that pretty much anywhere you are because of things like Food Network, because of the internet, because of grocery stores and importing and exporting, like you can get these things in small places now.
It is. It's beautiful.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up in New Jersey, but I was in India every summer and we will put anything in between two slices of bread there. Like we have butter pow. There's like just like fried potatoes and you put it between bread. It's just like there's nothing more fulfilling in life than putting something between bread.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. Mm.
savory.
But there is
sweet.
Sandwich culture. I don't think West Coast is sandwich culture. Mm. I mean, we are Asian. We are ethnic food culture because we all grew up with Mexican food, Salvadorian food, Thai food. East Coast is sandwich culture. Midwest is sandwich culture.
Definitely. I have a cast iron question.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Oh,
okay. How the hell do you clean this thing?
Yeah.
Like, it makes my food so delicious, but then I'm just staring at it like it's my arch nemesis. I'm like, how do I tackle it?
What do I do with you?
There are rules with cast iron and steel. And we have to up your fundamental discipline game. Mm-hmm. So firstly, you get it. You want to heat it up really hot and you want to throw a little kosher salt in it and a dry towel and buff it out. Just think about the surface. You have to have a relationship with that surface. Okay.
Yes.
You cook on it. And honestly, the best thing you're going to do is, yes, you're allowed to wash it with soap and water really quick, but not too abrasive.
Okay.
But just get it back on the stove, get it hot with kosher salt and a dry towel. Because every time you put fat in it, you're building a micro fine layer. And it's all about playing with that layer. So wash it quick, buff it out, but not buff the layer out, just buff out the top of that layer.
Okay. Mm.
And then every time you build that layer up little by little by little, and that's all seasoning is, right? But you can't get lazy. You can't leave a cast iron pan on the stove until it totally cools until tomorrow, the third day. It's just about getting in there quick, washing it out, and just remember, buff out the top layer. Don't go deep. And you know what I mean? So,
okay,
that's it. And you're going to have a really beautiful relationship. And in a year or three or five, that layer is going to be gorgeously seasoned and it's going to be a natural nonstick coating. And it's going to sear like nothing else you have in your kitchen.
Now, my partner is from New Orleans. And you know how partners want like trust, loyalty, love from each other? He just wants to see how good I can get my cast iron. That's how like the measure of a good partner. So I'm trying to get my cast iron right.
You got this. You got this.
He believes in me.
Jet, when you have a day off or when you're just cooking, what is the thing you want to cook for yourself? Like you've got a kitchen full of ingredients that you love and you've got the time. What do you want to make?
If I'm really lazy and I've really come off a big work day, I'm probably going to make a tuna melt in the air fryer.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I really want to make it a ritual and I'm going to cook for my wife, you know, we'll probably do like a, you know, roast some Japanese yams, make some like a miso salmon, like very simple things, but super flavorful. And we're not going to eat it and like hate ourselves for it. Right. You know, cause my, you know, our lives, I'm paid to eat food. I'm paid to judge food. And then when we're in cities, you know, we go out to eat, like our friends want to like adorn you with food.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very funky relationship psychologically, like this thing that most people prize and get and cherish. And it becomes something very special becomes every day. And you're fighting calories. Like, you know, you go out to eat, it's a 2,000-3,000 calorie meal. So when you're at home, it's about clean, delicious, fast. I mean, I think most chefs like to live in that world.
I guess I never really thought about that, but that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I went to 11 Madison Park, which is like the, you know, one of the craziest restaurants in the world. And like, it was such an experience, but there were people sitting next to me and like, they must've been there on their company's dime and they just couldn't care less.
Oh my God.
And for me, I couldn't imagine not having the wonder of that experience and not accepting every course that came to me with such joy.
Mm-hmm.
But does that happen to you when you're in the food world and you're just with it all the time? Does some of the luster come off?
Yeah, I think it's about mindset, right? It's about gratitude.
Mm.
You know, I think it depends. Like we all can come from, I know a lot of chefs that came from lean places like me, but still they've lost their minds and now they're like, you know, big deals in their own heads.
Yeah.
So I think it's about attitude. So for me, it's like, I wasn't on TV until I was 40. I mean, damn near 40. And I didn't have this life, quote unquote, until this last decade. So yes, it is. I think the economics term is diminishing marginal utility. The more you get of something, the less it matters to you.
Right.
So I try to focus on the who versus the what. So I might be at this very tiny, you know, restaurant, but if it's this grandma cooking, that's special.
Yeah.
Right. And if, you know, yeah, I could be at a very fancy restaurant. So I think it's about teaching your kids and yourself and just kind of your mantra should be grateful for every day and what you have. So it rarely loses its luster. But I do get like, dude, I can't eat 3,000 calories, man. Like I'm 5'7" and I'm on TV and I got to watch myself. Do you know what I'm saying? So yes. It's about being just very practical and be like, I love you and I love how you want to take care of me, but also like, don't kill me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you do kill me, I'm going to eat it and gratefully, and I'll pay later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good way to go if you're going to go.
I have one more that's, you know, kind of on the polar opposite, but similar to that question.
Yeah.
I love street food. I love halal. Mm. I love all that mm-hmm. stuff. I love taco trucks. What, and we all have our preferences for our favorite trucks, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And some of them are literally a $5 halal plate. What makes some street food so much, like tastes so much better than other street food?
Mm. Yeah. Most popular ethnic cuisine, people who had less and had to make more with it, right? We got the scrap cuts. We got like the fat, we got the sinew, we got the offal. But honestly, when you cook that stuff, it has, again, because it has more fat, it has more connective tissue and collagen, it's going to be more unctuous. Mm. So that's what makes it good. Like all the wealthy people over time got like the lean, right? Got the fancy, but that wasn't the most delicious. And I think depends culturally, you know, I mean, they're called the 1% for a reason. They eat different, they live different. Mm-hmm. Most of us in the 99%, it's fast, cheap and hot, right? And it's easy to make, you know, these offcuts delicious because they have so much natural fat and connective tissue in them. Add some salt and add some fermentation. And, you know, that's the dream meal. And that's how I eat. So if I had my choice out of 100 meals, I'm eating street food 99 meals.
So good.
One time I'm like, okay, let's go to this fancy restaurant, but I don't want the ritual. I don't want the multiple courses. And I just want to feel super full when I leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Jed, this has been so great. I think that really does it for me. What do you think, Raj?
Yeah, me too. I feel warm and hungry inside.
Yeah, we even got a little spiritual at the end.
Yeah.
Like we went on the whole journey, the whole food journey. Because I think in the end, food is really important to most people. And, you know, we have it at our celebrations. We have it when we're grieving. Like it's not just food. It's actually so much more.
It really is.
They're emotional bookmarks, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because anytime you're experiencing something, you know, that's like we love food because it goes so deep into our senses. It creates an experience and that feeling gets trapped really deep in the brain. And yeah, you can't get South Asians together and not get spiritual. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Like, 100% true.
Yeah.
It's time for Better in 5. These are our top 5 takeaways from this episode.
All right. Number 1. The key to cooking your most delicious food is practice, practice, practice.
And then practice some more.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, when it comes to knives, you don't need an expensive one, but you do need to keep it sharp.
And number 3, 99% of the time, kosher salt is going to do the trick. But if you want an elevated tasting experience, try a finishing salt.
Mm-hmm. Number 4, Jet loves his food processor and his microwave. So don't be a snob. If a gadget is going to help get something done, use it.
And number 5, when it comes to food and cooking, lead with gratitude and everything will taste better.
So Raj, how wrong have you been cooking?
I mean, a little bit wrong. One of the wrongest things, I think, was to assume that because I don't have fancy gadgets in my kitchen that I can't do things that well or make amazing food. And I think it's really empowering what Jet was saying about the $10 food processor and just like using a good sharp knife that doesn't need to be $100. It made me feel motivated to be like, I have everything I need in my heart and soul and kitchen to make really delicious food. What about you?
His whole approach, I just thought was so relatable. And I love that. I didn't know what he was going to be like.
Yeah.
And the fact that he came in here and was like talking about how much he loves sandwiches.
Yeah.
Is something that I think all of us can say, okay, this guy is one of the best trained chefs in the world. He eats some of the best food in the world, judges some of the best food in the world. And yet he loves a sandwich. And we love sandwiches.
We really do. And I think like that leading with gratitude thing is really important. Whether I'm having a delicious steak or just, you know, a grilled cheese, I want to come at it with the same excitement.
Give your Cheetos the love they deserve.
Yes.
And everything's going to be okay. Anyway, until next time, as long as there are things to get wrong, we're going to be right here to help you do them better.
Love y'all.
Do you have something you think you're doing wrong? Email us at amidoingitwrong@huffpost.com and let us know.
Hi. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.